Hi, my name is Gabriela Burtach. I'm Investor Relations Manager at Huge. Welcome to everyone, and thank you for joining us today for the Huge first earnings call. We have prepared a short presentation, and after the slides, we will have Q&A session. From the company, our presenters today are Anton Gauffin, Chief Executive Officer, Elad Kushnir, Chief Operating Officer, Grzegorz Kania, Chief Financial Officer, and Tal Shoham, Chief Marketing Officer. With that, I will now turn the call over to Anton Gauffin, CEO, to start.
Thank you, Gabi, and hello, everyone. Good day. If I can get the slide, I think it's number five. Yes, if I can get the next slide, let's start with this. This is our first annual results call as a publicly listed company. And I can say that 2020 was a year like no other. And yet in many ways, last year was just another great year for Huge. What I mean with that statement is to highlight the fact that we are a global growth company and that there is a lot of growth ahead of us. Our mission to empower billions of people to play together is what guides our execution. And to get there, we've been building Huge as a smart connected network that powers both first party and third party games. Back to 2020 summary, if we quickly discuss what we actually achieved last year, think about the numbers on this slide. 333 million revenue USD. That says that as a business, we were already close delivering on average $1 million per day. Think about that. This speaks behalf of our scale. How do we then consistently deliver industry leading KPIs, such as the $96 ARPDAU, which is best in class result? This is much thanks to our focus on social, on multiplayer, this play together in real time by people around the globe. This is the Huge Play Together experience, what we are so excited about. When I think of the 2020, I'm very proud and happy to report that we advanced our capabilities on all these fronts. Team Huge never sleeps. It is the constant improvement and growth mindset that drives us forward. In terms of actual records, in 2020, we broke many records, from highest daily revenue to highest monthly revenue to highest yearly and so on. Amazing success, and yet nothing exactly new to us. We have very strong business fundamentals, and strategy-wise, we are executing our build and buy playbook. In 2020, we did a lot of both, a lot of build and buy, and for sure, there's more to come. For those shareholders who are curious and want to learn more how the so far done acquisitions have served us, I'm pleased to share a couple insights regarding our playable platform, our ad tech acquisition we closed in July 2020. To that question, if and how successful this acquisition has been so far, since closing, we've significantly increased our total output, as the slide showcases. Part of this is thanks to Playable Platform and how it has enhanced and boosted our capabilities. In relative terms, we have already more than doubled the user acquisition campaigns powered by our self-optimizing playables compared to the point where we were when we closed the acquisition. In other words, we've been winning with our smart playables, and our great business momentum is not a fluke, but all about systematic build and buy and the operational excellence of the global team Huge. We are not just a gaming company, but in fact, there is a lot of highly advanced tech that is powering us and evolving Huge to be this smart connected network. That is very much our plan. With that, I'm happy to pass the mic to our COO, Elad, to talk more about the progress with our core and new franchises. Elad.
Thank you very much, sir. Hi, everybody. I'm Elad. I'm the Chief Operating Officer. I'm excited to talk to you today and feel privileged to be able to tell you about our amazing year and about amazing things going on inside the business. I'll talk first about our core franchises, which most of you should know. We had another amazing year, right? And we'll start with that, and that we're really, really proud with everything we've been able to deliver. We have some indicators in front of you on the left side of the screen, just to give you a sense. But I can tell you that almost every core key performance indicator across our core franchises has substantially improved from 2019 to 2020. We're extremely proud about this momentum, and this momentum was delivered with four core pillars in 2020, which you can see on the right side. First and foremost, which I hope you've already heard us say before, if you have been following Huge, is that we're on a mission to build the most professional games team on the globe. And it's not just a statement. It's an action that we take every day in everything we do. In 2020, we hired over 110 global games industry experts. We take this process and strategy extremely seriously. And we work under the philosophy that we bring in the expertise, we hand them a domain to manage, and we move out of their way. And really, that's one of our biggest growth drivers. And you'll hear more and more about that as you can get to know us. Second thing that we did in 2020 is that we delivered a best-in-class feature roadmap. Now, this is a highly competitive industry. Our players expect only the best, and we're competing with giants. And in order to compete with giants, we have to do exactly that, is deliver some amazing game features. I've listed some examples in front of you. Two of our collectible features that we launched in 2020, Huge Charms and Casino Fever. We consistently deliver high quality slots content, which is tier one by definition. And we have a very robust feature roadmap, both in 2020 and in 2021 and beyond. Third thing that we did in 2020 is that we further solidified our tech stack advantage. I think Anton mentioned this earlier in his slide, is that we're not just a games company. We're very much a technology company. We've developed game development engines, live operation engines, user acquisition tools. Artificial intelligence and machine learning models operate at scale in our games and in our marketing activities. I'm happy to say that in the next few, soon, maybe is a way to describe it, we'll be unveiling a little more about why we believe we have a substantial tech stack advantage, and we're really proud of that. Last but not least, and in many ways, we very much our secret sauce, right, is that we've executed a rich and entertaining live operations calendar. And for those who don't know what live operations is essentially we operate our games like an entertainment venue. So any player, depending on, unrelated to their level or to their, where they're located or how much money they spent in the game, we hyper-personalize that entertainment venue for them. So you and I might each arrive to the game on a same day, same hour, but we'd get a different experience based on our behavior. And really, that's very much part of our live operations capabilities. As a result, like Anton said, we delivered many record monetization days, months, and the entire year, and we substantially increased our user engagement and retention across the board. And we're super proud of that. So we had a great year to summarize in our core franchises, and I'll be happy to jump into our new franchises, where we even had an even more amazing year. Next slide, please. There we go. So, of course, you've heard Anton say many a time, right, that we're a global growth company, right? And we're obsessed with growth every day in everything we do. We think of how do we deliver more, if it's on our top line, bottom line, key performance indicators across the board. Our main acceleration of our growth in 2020 was our new franchises, right? So one of the things that we're super proud of is that in Q4 of 2020, 9% of our revenue came from our new franchises. In December, it was already double digit. And I can tell you already that in Q1 2021, it's even higher than that. And so all of this is must be considered that we're also growing on our core franchises, right? There's still a lot of upside in our core franchises. So we're super proud of the momentum that we've been able to bring to the table with our new franchises. We've grown our daily active users by 3x in 2020, and that continues to grow as we speak. The two games we want to highlight as growth drivers for 2020 was Traffic Puzzle, our Match 3 game, which is in our publishing division developed by a third-party developer, and Star Slots, another one of our core competency games developed inside Huge, the first-party game. Both are doing really well, and we're super excited about the growth that they're driving into our P&L. Next slide, please. Okay, this may be the most important slide conceptually, right? Because this is something that I want to make sure that everybody understands. When you look at the left side of the slide, you'll see our cohort cake, right? Essentially, what you're seeing is the revenue generated by installs by year. And what you see here is really important to understand, because Huge is very much an evergreen game company. Right? Many games have a bell curve. Huge's games don't. And the reasons we don't is really the nature of our games and the way that we operate them as an entertainment venue. Games as a service, some of you might have heard that term, or games as an entertainment venue, or live operations is really at the core of our expertise. And this drives a long-term loyalty of our players. Of course, this is on top of our core feature, right? Maybe our flagship feature is that we're a truly social mobile game company. What does that mean is that we have clubs inside our games, essentially a social network inside the game. 44% of our monthly active users are members of our club. 84% of our players interact with other players. And really what this does is that it generates a higher both monetization and higher retention. So our clubbers are extremely loyal. And by the way, also give us a very large competitive advantage over our direct competition. It's really not easy to build such a social network into the game. So on that note, I want to thank everybody for taking your time to listen, and looking forward to communicating with you again in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you a lot. And hello, everyone. Good morning. After those introductions from Anton and Elad, it comes as very obvious that I'm very pleased to present you with the key financial highlights for our results of 2020, as this was indeed a very good year, a year like no other. As Anton said, we've been able to increase our revenue for yet another year at the pace of almost 30%, 28% year-on-year revenue growth for the full year. And our adjusted EBITDA more than doubled, actually increased by 131% versus 2019. Consequently, we've also enjoyed significant increase in adjusted EBITDA margin by 7 percentage points from 10% in 2019 to high double-digit 17% in 2020. As much as the full year was a great year, so was the fourth quarter. A lot of those key highlights of the fourth quarters were discussed by Elad. When it comes to the product, our revenue increased by 24%, and that was driven by both core and the new franchises. As you've seen on previous slides, the new franchises accounted for 11% of our total revenue in December, this continues to increase going forward. When looking at our results of the fourth quarter of 2020, let me just come back to what we've communicated as our plans and product roadmap of 2020. The investments, the increased investments in the user acquisition in core and new franchises, were particularly increased in the fourth quarter. They increased by $15 million compared to the fourth quarter of 2019, comprised 45% of revenue, And as said, they resulted from actually a product roadmap and scaling up of the new franchises. We are investing in acquiring new players to keep up the high top line growth. Though in particular Q4 2020, that among other factors, which I'll discuss on further slides, led to a decline in adjusted EBITDA in the fourth quarter by $12 million to a level of $3 million adjusted EBITDA. Also, when looking at our results for the fourth quarter of 2020 in the revenue particularly, please remember that our Q4 2019 brought exceptionally unique growth moments that came from fundamental upgrades in the game economies that we implemented in September 2019. So the base of Q4 2019 already has the effect of this significant ramp up of revenue. When it comes to more details about our financial performance, as said, revenue increased by 28% from $259.4 million to $332.7 million, which was driven by our co-franchises that delivered 24% year-on-year growth, as well as our new franchises, which almost tripled their revenue during 2020 as compared to 2019. So as you remember from the product slides, we not only tripled our active users, but also, which is very positive outlook for the future, we were able to keep the same level of growth on the revenue generated in those new franchises. And thanks to such dynamic growth, our new franchises increased their share in total revenue from 5.6% in Q4 2019 to 9.2% in Q4 2020, and as said, 11% in December. As far as our operating expenses are concerned, our main cost item, user acquisition marketing campaigns, amounted to $111.5 million in the full year, which represents 7% decline versus the year of 2019. The decrease came mainly from our core franchises, and there we were able to optimize our marketing efforts by focusing on high value players through the retargeting campaigns. As you might remember from our roadshow presentations, the retargeting campaigns are about reaching out to the users who used to play our games in the past and used to spend money in our games in the past, and therefore I'm highly likely to spend money in our games again. At the same time, in 2020, we were increasing user acquisition in our new franchises, particularly in Q4, and the level of our investment in marketing campaigns in 2020 for new titles more than doubled as compared to the 2019. As said many times, the investments in user acquisition campaigns in Q4 2020 were considerably ramped up versus Q4 or 2019, and also versus previous quarters of 2020. And that was on one hand in line with the product roadmap of Huge Casino and Billionaire Casino, many live ops and other product features that Ella discussed earlier in the presentation. And on the other hand, we further increase our investments in the user acquisition to capture high ROI in opportunities of scaling our new franchises, particularly Style Slots and Traffic Puzzle. Consequently, our user acquisition marketing campaigns increased in Q4 2020 by 58% versus Q4 2019 and amounted to $40 million. Our notable OPEX item, research and development expenses, increased from $15.8 million to $29.8 million in 2020 as a combined effect of a higher headcount, which increased from 284 FTEs as of the end of 2019 to 371 FTEs as of the end of 2020, and also the effect of increased seniority of the team as our technology platforms get more advanced. General and administrative expenses increased from $14.2 million to $27.6 million, mainly due to higher cost of salaries and employee stock option plan expenses, but also as a result of higher cost of external finance and legal services in preparation for the company to go public. Those expenses, direct IPO expenses, amounted to $1.5 million, and the advisory expenses related to making the company ready for going public brought another $500,000 on top of it. So altogether, we can allocate $2 million of expenses from our G&A to those IPO related activities. Please also note that in our other operating expenses of 2019, we've got a non-recurring one-off provision of $6.5 million for settlement of a claim brought against the company in the state of Washington. That's obviously a non-recurring item for 2019. And similarly, our financial costs for 2020 and also in Q4 2020 include a very significant non-recurring expense related to and non-cash expense related to revaluation of Series C preferred shares liability, as further explained on the next slide, where I would like to guide you through the bridge between our reported and adjusted results. So when it comes to the EBITDA, as already described, the adjustment for 2019 includes the $7.5 million one-off provision for the Washington case, and the other adjustment relates to the employee stock option program expenses, which are non-cash expenses for our long-term incentive program to keep our employees engaged, motivated, and have their skin in the game. And what's not reported as an adjustment to our EBITDA, but what's maybe also worth noting are those IPO related expenses, which, as I explained a while ago, amounted to altogether to $2 million in 2020. When you look at the reconciliation or the bridge of net results to adjusted net results, you'll note that the adjustment related to preferred shares valuation, the financial expense and non-cash after the IPO, we can also say non-recurring financial expense related to revaluation of Series C liability, which is very specific to the accounting treatment of those preferred shares, amounted to $128 million in the whole year of 2020 and $190 million in the fourth quarter of 2020. Immediately before the IPO, the preferred shares Series C were converted into common, and the fair value of that conversion was recognized as part of the equity. So basically from the IPO forward, there will be no effects of any revaluation of those shares. Quick outlook on the balance sheet. What's maybe worth highlighting here is that the total assets comprise mainly of the current assets, and the largest proportion of which is $94 million of cash as of the end of 2020. And the other significant item of the remainder of the balance are the receivables. When it comes to equity, as I said, the Series C liability made our equity a negative one in 2020, and as also said, the revaluation of those shares immediately prior to the IPO and the recognition of it as an equity will make the equity positive already reported for the Q1. In addition to the $94 million of cash as of the end of the period, what is worth noting when it comes to our liquidity is that 2020 brought a very strong operating cash flow of $73 million, and that actually is contributor to this $94 million cash as of the end of 2020. On top of it go the proceeds from the IPO, and on the next slides you'll see that in the IPO we've raised net funds of $100 million. It's been the largest gaming IPO in Poland, the largest mobile gaming IPO in Europe. Altogether, offering was worth $442 million, attracted investors from more than 20 countries during the book building, And post IPO, our shareholding structure remains very stable. The three major, the three largest shareholders account for approximately 49% of shares. Those are Anton Goffin, Rainy, and Cora Management. With that, maybe a quick overview of our trading update. We've released the flash revenue or flash gross bookings report earlier this month. Our revenue of Q1 2021 increased by 27% versus Q1 2020, which makes the first quarter 2021 again the best quarter in the history of Huge for both our co-franchises as well as the new franchises. The co-franchises revenue increased by 16% and the revenue generated by our new titles in Q1 2021 again more than tripled versus Q1 2020. We kept our user acquisition marketing campaigns on the level which is very similar to that of Q4 2020 in absolute terms, and this is again in line with our increased investments in the user acquisition marketing campaigns in the first quarters of this year in order to capture those high ROI investment opportunities and scaling of our new franchises, which you can see on the right-hand chart on this slide. With the results of Q1 of 2021, we remain positive about our 2021 full year EBITDA outlook. Expect 2021 to be another record-setting year for our business overall. We envisage our revenue growth at low to mid 20s year-on-year, focusing on delivering operating results and continued improvements in the monetization across our games. We, as planned, expect our new franchise revenue to be at high 10% of the total revenue by the end of the year. And we also remain stable about our outlook for user acquisition expenses, which we expect to be at the level of 33 to 35% in the total of 2021, with higher weighting of spend in Q1 and Q2 and lower weighting of that spend in the second half of the year. Approximately one third of our user acquisition expenses this year will be allocated to scaling up the new franchises. We expect our adjusted EBITDA profitability, adjusted EBITDA margin in 2021 broadly in line with that of 2020. And this obviously comes with the increased costs of general and administration activities related to public company compliance and the increased investments in the user acquisitions. And again, reminder that due to the phasing of user acquisition expenses, we expect that our first half 2021 profitability will be lower than that of the second half 2021. With that, I would hand it back to Anton for the concluding slide on our 2020 earnings presentation.
Thanks, Grzegorz. Build and buy, specifically what comes to buy side, I think it's important to reiterate what is our focus. Essentially, we are looking for additional growth. We are looking for mobile free-to-play companies, great mobile free-to-play companies, and we love strong synergies and outlook of additional growth. When we do this, we think of the both short and long-term point of views, and ultimately, we are looking to take the company to our mission, building the network, so there needs to be strong alignment with that. We are highly disciplined how we do our buy part. As you can imagine, deal flow-wise, we've been busy talking with many teams, as this slide tells. We are approaching our business very systematically, and currently we have 5 opportunities in active pursuit. I'd love to tell you more, but I won't. The plan we communicated already during the IPO roadshow to have IPO proceeds deployed later next year is exactly still the case. what you can expect from us is that we are and will be highly active on the market now and in the future. And again, the buy part, it also includes our publishing activities, so it's not exclusive to acquisitions. With that, I think it's time for questions, and I thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Okay, so just a reminder, in order to ask a question, you can click on the raise hand button so we can unmute you, or you can type question in the Q&A chat. I think we can close the slides now.
Yes, I can see on chat there's a couple of questions already. Should we start?
Yeah, let's start with the chat. Okay, so on today's conference for journalists, the company confirmed interest in acquiring local mobile gaming studios. Does the company look at the game developers listed on Polish Stock Exchange or only non-listed companies?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So I think I didn't exactly, you know, answer in detail the question about if we have any publicly listed companies that we are speaking and how much. I can tell that our approach is a global one, and as I commented, as we commented earlier, we do see a lot of talent, and the whole Poland development, game development scene has been evolving very positively, and we are very proud to be part of that. We are not disclosing specific details of how many non-listed and how many listed companies we are currently discussing with.
Right.
Okay, the next question. Could you please compare the performance KPIs of Star Slots versus Billionaire Casino and Huge Casino at the same stage of life cycle?
Sure, great. That's a good question. So I think I'll use this opportunity to discuss about how we approach kind of new franchises in general, just to kind of make sure that everybody's aligned with how we operate. So, you know, at any given point, we work on a lot of games, right? And so we have an amazingly strong team executing our build strategy. At any given point, there could be a handful of maybe even more games under development inside the company. And really the way that this works is that there's a kind of a funnel process, you know, the ideation, prototyping, first experiments, market tests, et cetera, et cetera. Very few games make it to global launch, right? And it's really important that everybody understands how we operate on these new games and new franchises. And the reason I say this is because, you know, over the past months when we've been talking to investors and the market in general, right, there's a lot of interest in that. And I understand why, but I also want to make sure that everybody understands how we operate, right? And so I wouldn't like to have any unwarranted speculation coming from our early stage games, because in many times, right, these early stage games are just too young to have an opinion about. Regarding Huge Stars, which is already a little more mature and is formally kind of in a scaling process, I can tell you that we're extremely happy with the key performance indicators. Across the board, the conversion rate, the ARPDAUs, the retention KPIs are super healthy. If you put them on an industry benchmark level, we're doing really, really well. It's an iterative process, right? So we launch a new feature, we optimize, we launch another new feature, we optimize, we release more content, et cetera, et cetera. To the question, is it doing a comparative to HCBC at the same time of life cycle? We're super happy with where it is. We believe that we're going to be able to drive additional growth via this game. And we're super excited, both by the team and the product that we have on Huge Stars.
Okay, so the next question comes from the line of Ken Ram. You can now ask your question.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the presentation. I've got three questions. First one was just to understand a little bit the trend in R&D expenses and generally in FTEs. Where are you in kind of employees now? Where do you think, excluding acquisition, you might be the end of the year? I'm just trying to understand how far we are through kind of ramping for what you want to achieve in the current games. And then the second two questions are a little bit more straightforward. One is just on tax. It was lower than I expected last year. What should we expect going forwards? And indeed, you know, what goes into the taxable profit number to understand kind of the mechanics of that? And finally, a kind of more general one. We see in the States some of the real money gaming people who have social casino businesses, thinking of Golden Nugget, for instance, seem to be using social casino as to channeling their social casino players into real money gaming as that gets legalized. Do you see any effect of that? I know Playtika has said not on your players. And indeed, do you think that kind of lessens the competition in social casino if some of the competitors are kind of using it as a channel into real money gaming? Thanks very much.
Those were a lot of questions. I will take two of those. It's the last one, the social casino one, and the headcount one. Since I jumped on board, I'll start. So I'll start with the headcount one in terms of the FTE. So we're still in a scaling process of the organization. We're in the low to mid 600s right now in terms of FTEs. We expect to be into kind of the range of the 700 people by the end of the year. To be honest, the scaling process is not as quick as it used to be. So, you know, we're not growing the headcount aggressively. For the record, we don't have a target headcount growth target, right? It's not something we're looking for, right? In general, less people, more revenue is the mindset, right? And so I can say that just the short form of your answer is around 700 FTEs around the end of the year, more or less. Please don't hold us very tightly to that number. Your second question regarding the social casino and companies funneling players from social casino to real money gambling. So I'll start with a no, right? A big capital N and a capital O. So first of all, one, we don't do it and we'll never do it. Two, I don't know of any large scale social casino company that thinks that's a viable strategy. By the way, data shows it's an irrelevant strategy, right? It's actually a different user base, believe it or not. So anybody that you've heard is doing that is probably bound to fail with this strategy. And we think it's completely irrelevant. It's a very different user base, believe it or not. Our user base comes to be entertained. The real money gambling user base goes to gamble. It's a different world. So that's kind of that. And no, we don't see that. And because of that, we don't see it as a potential cannibalizing factor, right? I hope that answers both your questions, Ken.
Thank you.
You take the tax.
Yeah, if I may take the tax question, which is a very interesting one. And starting maybe with our tax rate and tax for 2020, and then trying to explain what happens going forward. So when it comes to 2020, we in our profit before tax, we had two significant items that are affecting our effective tax rate. And of course, one of those is the valuation of the Series C shares. As I mentioned, $128 million. It's a fully non-taxable transaction. So that definitely distorted the relationship between the loss and the taxes paid. And the other one was related also to the treatment of the Washington case settlement in 2020. And if we take the effect of those two out, we'll come up with what I would call a normalized relationship between the taxable profit and the tax rate. I'd gladly refer you to a note on income taxes to our consolidated financial statements where all those details are provided. And when it comes to the taxation going forward, I need to make maybe one important disclaimer in view of what is currently discussed in the United States. So we do know that our tax environment is subject to potential changes, which we can't at this very moment assess and can't therefore possibly make any comments on it. So that that said, we believe that our tax rate for 2021 and going forward will be similar to that which we would have had without those two significant items affecting the 2020 tax, which is the Series C valuation and the Washington case tax treatment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
and
so
did that answer all your questions?
I muted Ken, I'm sorry.
I was just saying thanks very much. I'll drop back into the queue. I can always come up with more questions, don't worry.
Thank you. So I see we have some questions in the Q&A. Gabriella, would you just moderate us to make sure that we answer them in the right order?
Yeah, exactly. I just want to let Matthew Walker to speak because he was raising hand. So Matthew, you can ask your question. Matthew, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Perfect, thanks. I put some questions in the chat. So it's about the timing for the launch of Bingo and Boland, and have you got the license for Boland? That was the first question. And then the other questions were, how are you gonna deal with IDFA for retargeting? There's a lot of experts who are pretty nervous about the ability of mobile gaming companies to find the right customers when that comes in. And then the last question was about the lawsuits against Apple for social casino games. What risk do you think you run there on the lawsuits? Obviously they're against Apple, not against your company, but how do you think Apple is going to react to people complaining about gambling and social casino games?
Yeah, maybe I'll take the first one regarding the launch dates. I think, you know, we don't want to speculate. And like I said earlier, how we operate the early stage games, we prefer not to talk about them. Even if I give you a launch date, it shouldn't be an indicator of anything to anybody. It would just be a vanity metric, which we think would be undisciplined of us to give out. So with your permission, I will respectfully decline to answer the question. I think it's not one that would add value because it would be very decontextualized from reality.
I think one thing perhaps worth kind of reminding here is that when we acquired Double Star, they were working on a game called Boland. Since that, this Boland engine has actually sparked a couple other product developments that we are taking forward called Rogueland and Arrows and Empires. And the Boland is also being taken forward by ByteDance Studio Ohio in China. So I think the question may have been specific. How is the Boland doing in China?
But I think the question is regarding the license, sir.
License part. So yeah, the Boland has indeed kind of sparked a couple new products, and we typically don't want to comment too much of the games that are in their earlier stages, as Elad said. Maybe then there were several questions. So, Gregos, maybe you want to take those parts.
There was also a question about the case brought against Apple regarding the social casino games. So, as you correctly noted, it's a case where Apple is defendant. Huge is not, as well as many others like Playtika or Zynga. Which have also their products listed on that claim. Maybe what's worth mentioning is that it's not the first claim of that type, and we know that the free-to-play market is a big one, and that it's also a regulated market. So claims like this, at such an early stage, will pop up, and we are not aware of any claims of that type that would be approved by the court. There have been, to our knowledge, there have been cases that have been dismissed, It's very difficult for us to tell what we expect Apple will do. We believe that Apple, as a distributor of free-to-play games, will react accordingly. We believe that in the regulated business that we operate for so many years now, we comply with all the regulations to the sufficient extent.
All right. I think the last part of Matthew's question was around the IDFA. I'll take that. Generally about IDFA, I'll give everyone on the call just kind of an understanding of how we've been preparing in the last 10 months. That we've been obsessing over this matter, taking it very seriously and putting a lot of resources into it in terms of hours, in terms of time we're spending with our partners and consultants and so on. So we have two dedicated task forces in the company that are meeting three times a week for the past 7 months already. One is general task force on the level of the entire company, on the huge level that kind of combines product, all the different studios, data, and so on. And we also have a dedicated task force on the marketing team. And like I said, we've been talking to all our partners, our MMP, which is AppsFlyer, about kind of how to deal with this, implementing new conversion values and events, kind of playing around a little bit with probabilistic kind of capabilities and probabilistic attribution. So we've been out there experimenting and talking and working on this extensively. So that we're very, very ready as much as we can be. I think we're also positioned a little bit better than other companies when it comes to IDFA. Most of our DAO is non-iOS. Most of our revenue is non-iOS. So in that sense, it's very good. 95% and above of our revenue comes from IAP and not from ads. So we don't have a big monetization kind of impact on our capabilities and our performance. It's still a big question how this will impact UA and retargeting, but we feel we have done kind of the most extensive and serious work that can be done, and we're as ready as we can be. This should happen this week, by the way, this kind of new ATT changes and the implementation of iOS 14 from a tracking and transparency standpoint. So let's see. But I feel we're as ready as we can be in the most professional way. And we've done a lot of work around this. That's the
best. Tal, maybe, you know, in the IDFA context, it's worth highlighting again the big investments we've done to the tech and kind of creative layer. If you want to share a few more words about Playable Platform.
Sure. So we've been kind of putting a lot of resources and a lot of our time on building a lot of technologies around marketing, around data, and around segmentation and targeting, and a lot of different things that we've been investing in. We've made an acquisition almost a year ago of a company called Playable Platform, a company that specializes in building technologies for playable ads, for consolidation of data of different formats and different ads, and doing automatic optimization of different formats, and by building many, 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 many different permutations of playable ads and optimizing on the ones that is working best and deprecating the ones that aren't. We've seen an insane increase in the amount of creatives and playables that we're able to generate. Just as a reference, a year ago, we were able to do 1 to 2 playables a month. Now we're able to do 40 to 50 with around 200 different iterations each month. We've spent around $1 million per quarter around a year ago on playables. We're spending $3 to $4 million a quarter on playables now. So we've kind of ramped up dramatically our capabilities. When we're looking at all our creative capabilities that we're able to generate today, we feel that we're in a much, much, much better place. And this has a lot of implications on the business, especially when it comes to $110 to $150 million of marketing budget per year. If we're able to optimize that by 10, 20, 30%, which we are, that's a massive, massive, massive improvement and a lot of upside for us on the marketing side. And that's exactly where we are now. And there's still a lot more to be done and achieved with that platform. And we're making much more, I would say, investments into marketing technologies and technologies in general. Like Elad said and Anton said, we're not just a gaming company. We also treat ourselves as a technology company, and we make a lot of investments there. So that acquisition of Playable Platform has dramatically improved our capabilities and optimization capabilities. So we're very, very pleased with that, and more to come, more to come.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up, which was you mentioned Traffic Puzzle and Star Slots as new games that you're focusing on. Is there anything that we should be aware of that you're going to focus on in new games for the second half of this year, aside from Star Slots and Traffic Puzzle?
Again, I think, you know, we highlighted these two games because they're maturing and they're already in a place where we feel confident in our ability to discuss them publicly and put our names on them, right? I think, again, speculating about any new other new games would just be undisciplined on our behalf. Sorry, Matthew, I know I'm kind of sounding like a broken record right now, but I do want to be really disciplined about talking about kind of prospective new games, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so maybe now let's take three questions about Traffic Puzzle from the chat.
Yeah.
The first one, could you comment, I
can take them all, Gabby. I have them. Okay. I have them in front of me. I'll take everything around TP. TP is part of the publishing activity, which I'm also managing and leading. So I'll just take those questions. Regarding daily active users for Traffic Puzzle, so we usually don't disclose daily active users numbers. It's also not something that we necessarily optimize according to. We optimize for other KPIs of growth, including DAO sometimes. But generally speaking, Q4, that game had between 100 to 150,000 daily active users. And that number is growing and growing and growing in Q1. And we're going to continue and growing that in the future. So that's about in that. About Traffic Puzzle, 2021, again, we don't want to disclose too much about specific games. Like Elad said, we're managing a portfolio of games. We're making changes in our investments in marketing and product and other resources, depending on game kind of a potential and growth and KPIs. So we rather not disclose too much about Traffic Puzzle in terms of exact numbers and growth, but I can say that this game has massively grown in the past 6 months, and we're planning on keep on investing and growing that specific game. Is there anything else about TP that I missed, Gabby?
Yeah. When do you expect Traffic Puzzle to reach profitability?
Okay. All right. So it's a good question, but we're not in that stage yet at all. Okay, we're only in a growth mode with that specific game. We believe that we can turn this game into a top grossing game, which we are planning on doing and we're investing in doing. And that's the core focus for the game, to generate hundreds of thousands of dollars on a daily basis as a top grossing game. And that's what we're focused on in terms of resources, in terms of marketing, in terms of working together with a third party kind of a partner that is building the game. And that's where the mindset is 100% for now, when we're solely focused on massive, massive, massive growth for the game, not yet focused on profitability.
Okay, so maybe one more from the chat. How is the cooperation with Cherry Pick Games?
Sure. So Cherry Pick Games, we're working together publishing a solitaire adventure journey. It's a solitaire game, still in very early stages. So there's not much that I could comment. There's a lot of upside on the product that we're working together with the Cherry Pick Games team, which we have a lot of fun, and it's a very, very talented team that I can say and can declare right now. But it's still early stages and far from kind of understanding the full KPIs and kind of the funnel of the game. We understand that there's more work to be done. We've mapped out everything that we can do together, everything around the product KPIs that we want to help and improve. But it's still very, very early stage. I'll go back to what Elad said about our portfolio management strategy. We have multiple games and we're investing in all of them, not equally, of course. When the time is right and KPIs are on standard, we'll invest more and more when it comes to marketing and kind of push that game for daily active users and revenue and so on. But it's still early with Cherry Pick Games. That's what I can say.
Okay, so now let's maybe allow to talk. The next question from the line of Robert. You can now ask your question. Hello? Okay.
I think you're on mute, Robert.
Yeah, his question was about cherry picking.
Yeah, maybe it was about the cherry
picking. Maybe we covered that already.
So maybe can ask your follow-up questions.
Okay. I was just wanted to check a point on where the ESOP expenses appear? Are they kind of spread through the cost lines or mainly in G&A? And what was my other one? Are we going to, would it be possible to get a breakdown of the quarters last year? Because obviously we have the 9-month figure and we'll have a first quarter figure when we get the first quarter numbers. But, you know, we're kind of making estimates for quarters without knowing what the figure was last year. Or have I missed it? In which case, maybe it's in the stuff that was published last night that I haven't read through. Thank you very much.
Yes, maybe I will take the question about ESOP costs. And yes, you are right. Beginning of 2020, we are spreading our ESOP costs along the functions. All details of it are in the notes of the financial statements. What I can tell you is that, of course, the largest part of it is in the general and administrative expenses. That's $2.6 million, and the research and development is 0.7, and the sales and marketing is 0.5. All of that you will find in note number 7 to our financial statements. When it comes to the quarterly split, I think that some part of it is already provided in our annual reports when it comes to, I think, revenue. When it comes to the results, it is a very tricky question, because we are doing our quarterly reporting for the first time this year. On the 25th, we'll be presenting our Q1 financial results and the comparatives. So I believe we'll just report it at that time. And the semi-annual results are subject to the review by the auditors. So again, the comparables will also be reviewed by the auditors. But I think that some data, when it comes to the quarterly split, some revenue data and gross profit data, or the gross sales margin data, we'll consider providing that in advance.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Okay, so the next question from the chat, could you comment on operating costs excluding UA in fourth quarter 20? Why they were visibly higher than on average in 9 months 20? What should we expect in upcoming quarters?
Maybe I will take that one. I mean, I think that the research and development was already covered by Elad when he spoke about ramping up the teams of research and development. I mean, there is not much more than the cost of salaries in that function. When it comes to the general and administrative expenses, I've already highlighted that there's about $2 million of extra costs related to IPO, either directly related to IPO of $1.5 million or $500,000 related to the external services that helped the company to prepare for going public. So definitely this had a significant impact on the cost base of Q4 2020 for the general and administrative expenses. And of course, other than that, when you see that, when you compare the first 9 months of 2020 and Q4 2020 on a pro rata basis, of course, yes, you will find out that the 2020 was a year of rapid organizational growth, such as were the previous years as well.
Okay, and the next question from Michał on the chat, could you tell us more about retargeting in casino games? How increasing the share of retargeting in your marketing budgets impacted KPIs and results of your games? Are you still planning to spend around 30% of marketing budget on retargeting in 2021?
Sure, I'll take that one. So yes, retargeting is indeed still a very, very big part of our strategy and also part of our future strategy for the marketing side. We're heavily investing also on the product and technology side, and also in kind of the UA or retargeting dollars that we're actually spending with the amount of partners that we have, different creatives and so on. So that's still a very, very big part of our strategy for sure. Today, we're spending around 20 to 22% of our marketing user acquisition dollars on retargeting. That's kind of roughly the number for the total company. Of course, 99% of that goes for our slots and casino games. We are starting to spend also retargeting on some of our other games as well, but we're still in the range of 3 to 5% of retargeting spent on those games, which will increase dramatically. I do expect us to finish around 30% like we're planning and like we stated in the prospectus and the roadshow. That will be roughly the numbers that we're aiming for. There's still a lot of product development and enhancements that we're investing in, like all type of different segmentation capabilities. We're working on capabilities of giving very, very interesting rewards and gifts for our users that are not regular and are part of our core capabilities today. So we are making a lot of different advancements and in kind of putting resources into the tech and product side, which will probably be ready in the next few weeks. And then we can even ramp up more our investment. In terms of KPIs, retargeting remains our best performing kind of in terms of return on investment and ROAS. We're seeing 2 to 3 to even 4x capabilities in terms of performance when we're investing our money in retargeting, when we're comparing that to user acquisition. So definitely superior KPIs, very, very similar to kind of our strategy at the beginning of the year. We're now just executing on it and we're kind of seeing the fruits and the results as we go.
Okay, thanks, Tal. And the next question, okay, Matthew lowered his hand. So the last question in the chat, one of the risks highlighted in the prospectus were insufficient resources in reporting department. Did you manage to mitigate this risk?
Thank you. I think that the best example that we did manage is the meeting today. We have it more than a week ahead of the statutory deadline for reporting our annual report, annual results. The audit went very smooth, and the preparation of the annual report was run very smooth. We've installed, as we also indicated, we changed our ERP system to SAP Business One. It's up and running. We'll be reporting our first quarter results out of it. We've installed a highly capable, very experienced and full of expertise team for the reporting function, and I'm quite confident that those risks, as were explained in the report, in the prospectus, have been mitigated to a sufficient extent.
Thanks, Grzegorz. Okay, I don't see any further questions, but if you have any at later stage or you want more information or data files, you can reach out to me or Kasia Schulz, or you can just go to our IR website. And I will now ask Anton for closing remarks.
Thanks, Gabi. Thank you all for joining. Please remember to download our games. We appreciate your engagement, reviews, and in-app purchases, of course. Stay tuned for more huge action. Thanks again. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.